And good morning, America, and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, and I'll be kind of your facilitator today. But our host this morning is Dwight Zimmerman. This is our At Ease segment of Veterans Radio, and I was just looking here at our notes, and I see that this is the beginning of his second year for Dwight being the host of the At Ease segment. And Dwight is an award-winning author, as we all know, and president of the Military Writers Society. And Dwight, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Dale. Glad to be here, and kicking off the first show of our second season. It's amazing that how time flies,
especially when you're having fun.
Yes, indeed. And At Ease, everyone, is coming to you live from Studio 4F at Veterans Radio East here in Brooklyn, New York, where the weather is absolutely gorgeous.
As it is here. I think we've finally broken that winter jinx, although it did snow just the other day here again.
Yes, my mother, in North Dakota has been, complaining about the weather patterns, and she's ready for spring.
Well, that is true. Well, as we know, that this segment every month that Dwight does for the At Ease is that he talks with different authors about different types of books. And so, Dwight, who are your guests coming up today?
Well, you have a great group today. We're welcoming back my friend Stephen Kuntz, who's got a new book out, Pirate Alley. And my longtime friend, Wayne Van Zandt, has done an absolutely stunning graphic history of Gettysburg. I'm really excited about that for him. And Mike Ritland, together with Gary Brozek, has written an absolutely incredible story about, it's titled Trident Canine Warriors. It's about military working dogs, and these are ones that have been trained for special operations missions. It's a riveting account, and I can't wait to start talking to him about all of that. But before we get into that, we have, as we've been doing recently on the show, a Test Your Civil War IQ question taken from my upcoming book that's going to be out this fall called Test Your Civil War IQ. It's going to be, there are 500 questions in it, and it's wide-ranging. And today I have a question here that someone calls in and gives us the correct answer. They will get an autographed copy of my book, Uncommon Valor, the Medal of Honor, and the Warriors Who Earned It in Afghanistan and Iraq.
That's a pretty good prize, because I've read that book, and of course Dwight has talked about that book on the program before. I think you're going to have to do an updated version of it, because you're going to have to add a few more Medal of Honor recipients, it sounds like.
I am so happy that we are getting more and more, because for so many years, we just didn't have any.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to, include a couple extra, in the paperback edition, and then, of course, we've had more since, so we will see how it plays out.
Okay.
Now,
all right,
on
so
to our question.
Here's, I don't, I have to do a drum roll.
Oh, okay.
All right, and the question of the day is?
True or false? The U.S. Army Medal of Honor was the first authorized Medal of Honor.
True or false? The Army Medal of Honor was the first Medal of Honor designed, I guess you could say.
Yep.
And and utilized. So all you got to do is give us a call here at Veterans Radio, and that number is 877-573-7825. 877-573-7825 with your answer, true or false, and you'll win an incredible book. We're going to be coming right back with Dwight's first guest. That's Stephen Kuntz is on the line. So we're going to do a little break here to earn a couple of dollars or shekels, I guess you could call them. And we'll be right back with Dwight Zimmerman and At Ease.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
And we're back on Veterans Radio, and we are going to turn it over now to our Studio 4F in Brooklyn, New York, with Dwight Zimmerman. Dwight, you are on.
Thank you, Dale. And my first guest I'm happy to welcome back is New York Times bestselling author Stephen Kuntz with his latest book, Pirate Alley. Stephen,
well, hello.
Welcome.
Hello, Dwight.
Welcome
it's
back.
Good. It's good to talk to you again.
Yes. Your books, I have to say, I have a love-hate relationship with them. I love them because I know I'm going to have a great time reading them, but I hate them because literally I can't put the darn things down.
Well, that's great. That's a wonderful thing for an author to hear.
Yes, I know. This was an absolute incredible ride, and I have to say, you got some powerful quotes here. I'm looking at the back jacket here. Former Defense Secretary William Cohen, W.E.B. Griffin, Larry Bond, Dalton Fury, who did kill Bin Laden, Howard Watson of SEAL Team 6, Jim DeFelice. You didn't mess around here, did you?
Well, these authors, including Stephen Hunter, were very, very kind, and I'm a very obviously very flattered by some of the things they said about the book.
Now, this is the latest in a series of books that you've written featuring the characters Jake Grafton and Tommy
Carmelini.
How many books in the series?
This is the fifth.
Okay. Give our listeners a little bit of background about how the series evolved.
Well, Tommy Carmelini was in the Jake Grafton book, starting with the book Cuba, and as a minor character, and the more I used him, the more I liked him, and finally decided after Liberty that Jake was, he's a senior officer and what it was getting long in the tooth to be an action adventure hero, and I decided I'd use Tommy to tell the main story in Liars and Thieves in the first person. And Tommy is young, he's hip, he's irreverent, and he's just a burglar who got dragooned into joining the CIA, and so he works out very, very well as a major action-adventure character. And I've had a lot of fun with him, and the readers seem to like him, and so he's back again telling his portion of the tale in the first person, and Jake sort of is the wise old head that directs the action and orchestrates the drama.
Well, yes, and there is a lot of drama in this story. So if you could, please summarize the plot here of Pirate Alley for us.
Well, Pirate Alley is about the Somali pirates capturing a cruise ship. It's set today in the Gulf of Aden. The pirates actually, after a drawn-out naval battle, managed to get the cruise ship with 450 passengers and 350 crewmen into the port of Ely, Isle, Somalia, which is just a fly speck on the Somalia coast, ruled by a pirate chieftain named Ragnar. And he wants $200 million ransom, and Jake Grafton is assigned the task of rescuing the crew and the passengers of the ship.
And then there's a kicker in here that really raises the stakes.
Right. The Shabab, which is the Islamic fundamentalist revolutionary group that's been fighting the civil war in Somalia for 17 years, plans to actually confiscate the ransom and kill all the passengers and crew in a terror act that they hope will ignite worldwide jihad. And the United States gets wind of that, and so that raises the stakes for the rescue.
And I have to say, when you come to creating villains, you scored big time. Your pirates are brutal.
Well, you know, I think the key to a good thriller is good villains. And obviously we need a fun hero for the fans, the readers to root for. But, you know, heroes are measured by the size of the villains they face. And so, you know, pirates are... They're a classic, you know, anything from pirates to the Caribbean to the today's real pirates. They're not warm and fuzzy folks.
No, the way you did that, they sure they are anything but. What really impressed me is all these many little touches, these vignettes that you have that really help round out the story. And you got an absolute jerk of a Secretary of State, a former Stasi member who was a passenger on the ship, who is now a cocaine mule. There's this Somali woman who, near the end, you know, comes onto the scene briefly with an AK-47 and murder in her eye. And then there's this woman passenger who winds up being raped, and the revenge that she gets. Boy, you cover the range.
Well, you know, one of the things that I wanted, this isn't just a military story. It's a story of the passengers and the crewmen. And, you know, can you imagine a more horrifying thing to be captured by pirates and held for ransom, and the pirates really don't care if the passengers live or die, and these people get ill, and they have their problems, and they're being held against their will and kidnapped, in effect, for ransom. And so, you know, I wanted the readers to get the feel for what that might be like. Obviously, we can't write about 350 or 450 passengers and 350 crewmen, but we can pick certain people and tell their stories.
Yep, and it really held my interest, I have to say. The way we were bouncing around the different scenes, you know, the little touches and how they, you know, these little stories progressed, you know, well done.
Well, thank you. We have high hopes for the book. It will actually be in the bookstores and be released on May 7th. And, of course, it can be pre-ordered from bookstores, online, wherever. And my publisher is excited. I'm excited. We think we've got a great cover for it. We've got a story that will captivate anybody that ever took a cruise or anybody that's contemplating taking a cruise.
Well, you might have scared off some people.
And we hope it'll also attract all the fans of Jake Grafton and Tommy Carmelini through the years.
Yes, well, I just have to say, I've been just so impressed with this story. I think it took me about 8 hours of straight reading, you know, to do.
Well, I think Stephen Hunter called it the one-sit read book of the year, and it's not a huge book, but it's hopefully an action adventure that will appeal to today's readers who are looking for a light reading and something to divert them from the problems of the everyday world.
Yes, indeed. Now, you served in the military, correct?
Yes, I spent a total of 21 years active in reserve, retired from the Navy, and flew A-6s in Vietnam, and did a couple of cruises off the Enterprise the last 2 years or 3 years, the Vietnam War, and I was a flight instructor on A-6s and various other things, and then went to law school and became an attorney and stayed in the Naval Reserve, and finally got into writing in the mid-80s, and I've been a full-time novelist since about 1986. And so I think this has turned into a career.
Wow. So what's your next project?
Well, the next project is already in the can, and it's done. It's the third of the Saucer series. I wrote a light sci-fi series called Saucer and then Saucer the Conquest, and this is the third and last of the trilogy, and it'll be published next winter by St. Martin's Press. Backed by popular demand, I've been inundated with emails through the years by people that read the first two Saucer books and demanded a third one, and that finally persuaded me to sandwich it in between thrillers. And so the aliens arrive in the last one. So I've had a lot of fun with that, and I think it's going to captivate the readers because I had to find a completely new and different way to do aliens. You know, we've had everything from H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds to zombies and aliens who take over the White House and all this other stuff. So I had to do something different, and I think this is different, and the readers will enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about the research that you do, because like Pirate Alley, for example, I really felt like I was there, even in that Somali town. Very vivid.
Well, you know, the Somali town, I altered it slightly, but I looked at satellite photographs of Isle Somalia and read a lot on the current U.S. Navy and Allied Navy ops to try to protect ships. Read everything I could find on the pirates and how the Somali pirates actually work and the situation in Somalia. And then ran various portions of the book by experts. For example, my former BN is a retired admiral, and he read the military portions and suggested changes, which were made to try to assimilate reality and get a little verisimilitude in there. And, I'm not writing books about how the military does it. I'm writing thrillers. But it still had to be close enough to reality that the people, you know, had a good read.
Yes, indeed. Well, I'm talking here with Stephen Kuntz, whose latest book, Pirate Alley, is an absolutely fascinating read. And, Stephen, if you could, again, you know, tell our listeners, because the book is going to be out soon, when it will be released again, please?
It will be released on May 7th. It will be on sale in all the nation's bookstores on May 7th. It is currently available for pre-order online and pre-order in bookstores. I might also, Dwight, tell readers that they can read an excerpt from it on my website, which is www.koontz.com. And you got to spell my name right, Koontz.com.
Indeed.
Dwight, I just wanted to jump in here because I am reading the book on his website right now. And, Stephen, I want people to realize that you also wrote Flight of the Intruder, which many of us saw in the movies and have read, you know, often. And your story is just fascinating. And I wanted to make sure that our people, you know that you write such a wide variety of books. And I've tried
to keep the juices flowing by doing different things. I've written, this is the 16th thriller, and then there's three saucer books. There's five anthologies, some of them contain original fiction, some of which I wrote. And then there's nine co-authored books that appear, eight of them in paperback and one hardcover, the Deep Black series. So I've been busy scribbling. I think I've got 32 or 33 books in print, and as I say, Saucer 3, the title is Saucer Savage Planet. It'll be out next winter, and meanwhile, I got to get busy on another thriller, Jake and Tommy, and hope to turn it in about the 1st of December for publication in 2014.
Jeez. You don't want to get these guys, you know, just sitting around not doing anything, right?
Yeah, writers write, it's an incomplete day if you don't spend 3 or 4 hours at the computer making pages.
I wanted to jump in here, remind our audience, if you'd like to talk with Stephen, give us a call here at 877-573-7825, and don't forget you need to answer that question about the Medal of Honor. I was just fascinated because I just recently was in the airport in Phoenix and going through the little bookstore, and you've got yourself a own little section there.
Well, thank you very much. I've been very fortunate. I've been, a professional writer and managed to stay in this game for about 27 years now, and that is rare. And I thank my lucky stars and also thank the American public, which has read these books in numbers sufficient to keep me eating. And I hope they continue to do so.
Yes, indeed. The way you keep writing here, I can see, you'll definitely keep an audience.
Okay.
Dwight, we've got some of your other guests on the line, so we can, if you'd like to, we can say goodbye to Stephen and move on.
Then let's do that. Stephen, again, thank you so much for being on At Ease, and good luck with Pirate Alley and your other projects. I hope
Thank you very much, Dwight, for having me on your show, and good luck. Have a great day.
You too.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Wow, Dwight, I don't know where you find these guys. That's pretty amazing. I mean, it was amazing when I saw the list of authors that you had on today, and I wasn't kidding. I was in the airport, and I was looking at one of those bookstores, and I'm going, oh, there's that name. I know that name. And it's only because that you've been able to bring these on. And can you talk just real briefly? Stephen mentioned, you know, writers write, and that, you know, you must have to sit down and write a little every day, don't you?
If I'm not physically writing, then I'm doing research, because, as you know, I do nonfiction stuff, and the amount of research involved, you know, even in the short articles that I do a lot of, you have to, you know, read, you know, distill, and then, you know, sit on it. And so, yeah, there are times where, you know, I'll just sit down and, you know, write physically, you know, be writing away. Other times it's doing the research, and it is 7 days a week, you know, type of work.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I do have to say that I'm not constantly writing with respect to doing an 8 or 10 hour day. I used to, but now the actual writing is, as Stephen said, about 3 to 4 hours. But then the other times I'm doing research, reading books, reading articles on the internet. It is what we do. It sounds like a glamorous life, but it's a lonely one.
It is a lot of work, and I just wanted our audience to know how much work is involved with this, because and also you're working with the Military Writers Society, and you have what 900 members of that organization now, and every time I've met all of them, they. Other than breaking for the conference, they all try to sit down and write X number of hours every day or X number of words every single day.
Everybody has his or her own system, but yet you do have to be very disciplined, regardless of how you approach it, because you have to be alone, and sometimes writers are their own worst enemies, because they can always figure out a distraction on how, you know, to avoid writing. But, the only way that you can actually get something done is to just sit down and do it.
Well, we've got another guest for you that sat down and did it. And this is the author on the Trident Canine Warriors. And why don't you introduce Mike?
Okay. Mike, are you there? Okay.
Yes, how are you guys doing?
There you are. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yes. And Mike Ritlin has written with Gary Brozek the book Trident Canine Warriors, about elite Navy SEAL military working dogs. And Mike, I have to apologize. The book arrived just a couple days ago. This is apparently an earlier copy had gotten lost in the mail, so I'm still in the middle of reading this, but I have to say, you have written a fascinating story here. It's packed with a lot more information than I expected.
Oh, well, good. You know, my intention was in fact to do just that. I had seen a lot of, different reports out, you know, especially after the Bin Laden raid. There seemed to be a lot of perpetuated myths and just factually incorrect statements that were out regarding the use of canines, most specifically in special operations. But there also seemed to be a great lack of knowledge and understanding that they even existed. When I saw how much interest there was in that specific dog just by himself, and how many people wanted to know more about it, and how few people knew a lot about them, it made me realize that, number one, somebody with credibility and the knowledge to be able to put that out there needs to do just that. But also, I thought it was important to highlight just exactly how fascinating and incredible these dogs are and how much they do help us overseas.
Indeed, and I've completely captivated by what you've written here. So if you could tell our listeners, Mike, how your background, your military background, and how that led you to become involved with the military working dogs.
Sure. I guess taking a step back, I actually, I grew up with working dogs my entire life. I had bird dogs growing up, and then I got into catch dogs, hog dogs years after that. And then when I was on deployment, combat deployment in Iraq as a SEAL, there was a Marine working dog, and a group of Marines. The dog was out front. They were getting ready to enter a cave complex. It had a very small opening that they could just barely fit through, and the dog was out front. And he went out and searched and indicated that there was explosives right inside the doorway, and as it would turn out, there was a grenade booby trap right inside the door. And had that dog not been there, without question, the first one to three guys would have been either killed or severely injured. And for me, that was a very stark realization in my mind that, that could have just as easily been our group. It could have just as easily been me. And why aren't we using these dogs everywhere we go? And, for me, it was a light switch moment. From that day forward, I inundated myself with all the best trainers I could find. I read as many books as I could get my hands on, trained with as many dogs as I could. And then when the dog program out on the West Coast, in the West Coast SEAL teams where I was stationed, when that was stood up, I played a small role in that as I was getting out and separating, and I was offered a position as a handler, but turned it down to start my own company and provide dogs and trainers and training for that same unit. So it meshes the two things that I feel most passionately about, which is dogs and the special operations community.
How many years have you been doing this business?
Going on 4 years now. So, from early 2003 until 2009 is when I, just trained as much as possible and worked with as many groups as I could. And, kind of got my knowledge base where it needed to be and then started my own company and have been doing it for the last 4 years.
Do you say that the breed that you prefer is the Malinois? Why is that?
I guess I don't know that I'd necessarily say I prefer it. What ends up happening is that we have a very specific set of standards that we really won't compromise on in terms of what we look for in a working dog. And overwhelmingly, the Belgian Malinois successfully passes that selection criteria. And so while I would happily take any breed of dog, provided it checks all the boxes of what I'm looking for and what I need in a good working dog, the reality of it is the Belgian Malinois, Dutch Shepherd, and German Shepherd, which are all very, very similar. I mean, it's kind of like the difference between a yellow lab and a chocolate lab, honestly. It's almost the same breed, but the fact of it is that those three breeds are without question the dogs that overwhelmingly pass that selection test. So,
okay, well, we're approaching the break right now, so stay with us there, Mike. We are talking with Mike Ritland, about his book, Trident Canine Warriors, and we're going to take a little break here and be right back to finish our discussion with Mike.
Sounds great.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Private Charles Barker volunteered to cover his unit's withdrawal. Details after this.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kid.
The German Navy to serve my country.
every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Barker was on a combat patrol in Korea, engaged in screening an approach to Pork Chop Outpost. Barker and his companion surprised and engaged an enemy group digging emplacements on the slope. Totally unprepared, the hostile troops sought cover. After ordering Barker and a comrade to lay down a base of fire, the patrol leader maneuvered the remainder of the platoon to a vantage point on a higher ground. Barker moved to an open area, firing his rifle and hurling grenades at the hostile positions. As enemy action increased in volume and intensity, mortar burst fell on friendly positions, ammunition was in critical supply, and the platoon was ordered to withdraw into a perimeter defense preparatory to moving back to the outpost. Voluntarily electing to cover the retrograde maneuver, Barker gallantly maintained a defense and was last seen in close hand-to-hand combat with the enemy.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
For the past 100 years, Amish furniture craftsmen have placed great value upon the beauty and quality of their work, with great attention paid to the details of the wood. Each board is then hand-selected to match the specific furniture in mind and in achieving the desired look of the finished piece. At Naked Furniture of Ann Arbor Showroom, you will find displays of this fine craftsmanship that you can afford and own. Now is the time. You can visit Naked Furniture at 3570 Washtenaw Avenue and experience this fine quality for yourself. The furniture consultants at Naked Furniture of Ann Arbor are there to show you the fine details of Amish furniture. See for yourself the fine quality Amish furniture. Go to Naked Furniture of Ann Arbor, 3570 Washtenaw Avenue, or visit their website, nakedfurnitureofannarbor.com.
And you're back on Veterans Radio, and we're listening to Dwight Zimmerman with this month's issue of At Ease with his guest, Mike Ridlon. And Dwight, you're on.
Okay, thank you, Dale. Okay, as Dale said, I'm talking with Mike Ridlon here, whose book just came out, Trident Canine Warriors, about some very special military working dogs. These are trained to work with the elite units in the U.S. Special Operations Community. And, Mike, again, could you tell our listeners where they can get copies of your book?
Sure. The book is available through all major, retail book outlets, whether it's Barnes & Nobles. You can order it online with Amazon. It's at Walmart and Target. It's at Hastings. Really, any major bookstore, you can find it, even airport bookstores, it's available. So there's a multitude of places to pick it up at.
The thing I found fascinating was that basically what you're writing in here is that you have these canines that are essentially special operations members, that they are elite dogs over and above what we would normally think. And I have to say, that took a little getting used to.
Sure. The thing of it is that the dynamic nature in which we operate, it requires that if we do bring dogs on operations such as those dogs have to be at the absolute elite level in every regard. So, there's not an environment that we operate in that we can't or don't take these dogs, with the exception of diving underwater. Everywhere else, these dogs are accompanied with us almost exclusively. So, by nature of what we do and how we do it, those dogs have to be just at the absolute highest level possible. And I would equate it to, the Michael Jordans and the Kobe Bryants of the working dog world, because you need every characteristic and aspect of these dogs has to be at just an over the top level.
Mike, this is Dale Thronberg. I just question, how long do you have to train these dogs before you turn them over to the SEALs?
Well, it's several years. From the time that the dog is born until he's really ready to even start training for this type of work, which is a little bit semantics. I mean, if the dogs start training, the third day they're alive. So, it's a very encompassing process, and the dogs do, several years of training before they're at the point where they are seasoned enough to do the type of work that we're asking them to do. So, once I get them, it can be anywhere from the better part of a year or sometimes even longer. There's a lot of variables that dictate how long we work with them, depending on how much training they've already had, who's getting them and what their experience level is, and what the specific operations that the dogs are going to be going on are. But generally speaking, it's several years of training before the dogs are able to do the type of work that we need them to do for real.
Do you breed the dogs yourselves, or do people bring them to you, or you go out and look for them, or how does that work?
It's a little bit of everything. I do breed some of the animals. I do buy them as young dogs from private individuals. I do import them from overseas, as grown adults that have a lot of training on them, and everything in between. So, there's such a need for these types of dogs that what I look for is genetics. The training is what it is. Personally, I'd prefer they have the least amount of training on them possible, mm-hmm. So that I can do it from scratch the way that I want it to be done. However, because that combination of genetics that is required to do this type of work is so incredibly rare, I'll take any dog that has all the things that I look for. And when I say genetics, the certain type of testing requirements that we put them through, we're looking for what their genetics, what their inherent given traits allow them to do and makes them behave. So regardless of how much training they've had, we can kind of see into the genetic eyes of the animal and be able to know what exactly we're working with from Mother Nature. So that's what we look for, and when we find it, we snatch it up and work with it.
Okay. Mike, we appreciate if you could tell us a little bit about one of the dogs and a mission that he and his handler were on, and because I'm sure that our listeners would love to know, what kind of missions and what they do.
Sure. Absolutely. There was a specific operation in the mountains of Afghanistan where the SEAL team platoon was on patrol. They inserted via helicopter. They fast roped down with the dog. They started their patrol and got a few kilometers into it. And the dog is out front sweeping for explosives, out ahead of the group. And then he indicated that they were, in fact, not alone. He gave off some body language that the handler recognized from having done it so many times through training, that the dog was saying, hey, there's somebody else out there nearby, and it's not good. So they halt the patrol. The dog is released. He ran up a couple hundred yards up ahead and crashed down into a culvert on the side of the route that they were patrolling on, and there were a handful of insurgents there set up in an ambush formation, getting ready to ambush the unit walking by. The group then swept in, neutralized the threat, got the dog back with them, and continued patrolling. And, to me, that's one of hundreds or even thousands of examples of how these dogs regularly and routinely save our guys' lives. The fact is that their nose and their hearing is so much better than ours or any equipment that we have, that it's an incredible augment. And when you combine a dog at that level with those sensory capabilities, combined with special operations groups that are all on, pretty high-speed communications and night vision devices, that combination is pretty effective. And so it's a veritable perfect storm of of what we need to do overseas. And, you know, I can't sing enough praises about them and the work that they're doing for us.
And I echo those praises, too. And, Mike, I want to thank you for being a guest on my program. I've been talking with Mike Ridland and his book, Trident Canine Warriors, that is available, you know, at all, you know, fine bookstores and Internet outlets. Mike, good luck.
Could I add one thing?
Sure.
I started a nonprofit called the Warrior Dog Foundation, and we retire these dogs when they're finished with their service. And you can go to warriordogfoundation.org and check out what we're all about. And you know, all any and all support is greatly appreciated.
Yes, indeed. Okay, again, Mike, thank you so much for being a guest, and good luck with you and your foundation.
All right, thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Well, there you go, Dwight. People love these programs about dogs and the dog handlers that train them and utilize them. And we've talked to a couple of other people about these Warrior Dog Foundations that are out there to place these dogs once their military careers are over.
Yeah, it's really amazing that especially the dogs that have been wounded in action and essentially have to be retired. I have yet to get into that section in Mike's book, but I did, you know, when I was scanning it. He does mention post active duty fates of these dogs, and so I can't wait to get into that section and find out really what he did there. But
I think you're going to find it an amazing story. I'm sure that his is very similar to the other guests that we've had on Veterans Radio. I want to remind people, you know, you haven't answered his question yet. So is the Medal of Honor designed, you know, by the Army? Is that the original Medal of Honor or not? True or false? Give us a call at 877-573-7825. You got to do that. And Dwight, your next guest is on the line and ready to go.
Okay. Well, welcome, Wayne.
Are you there?
Okay.
I'm here.
My last guest today is writer-artist Wayne Van Zandt, and he's going to be talking about his latest book, The Graphic History of Gettysburg. Now, Wayne and I go way back. In fact, Wayne was my artist on Graphic History of the Vietnam War that we did, and also last year, graphic biography, The Hammer and the Anvil, about Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass. So,
we also go back to you as an editor for me in several things before that.
Oh, yes. We've got a long career stretching back to our Marvel years.
mm-hmm. That's right.
Okay. So, Wayne, tell us a little bit about this book.
Okay, well, the full title is Gettysburg, The Graphic History of America's Most Famous Battle and the Turning Point of the Civil War, which is quite a mouthful, but we got all that on the cover. But it's published by Zenith Press, and, of course, there's a lot of books about Gettysburg, but I have written and illustrated a lot of Civil War stuff, plus, you know, Vietnam, World War II, other things. But I thought with the anniversary, 150th anniversary coming up, it would be a good idea for a graphic illustrated version of it. So that's what I pushed. There's a lot available on Gettysburg. There are a lot of photographs, but it's hard to kind of see actually what it was like in the battles. So I've tried to do that with this book.
Well, it's an amazingly rich story that you did in just 96 pages, and also this is 96 full-color pages. So yeah, that I was really impressed with the level of quality here in the research. Of course, tell us about this research and the accuracy, because there's...
Well, I tell you, as I say, I knew a lot about the battle, and my primary interest has been World War II and the Civil War, and just about everything between and after. I love history in general, but I had, of course, read a lot about the battle before. I had been to Gettysburg, and that was a big help. because to me the ground is although it had you have high points and all that, it's very subtle. If you look at photographs, you don't get the elevations quite as much. I tried to convey that as best as I could, because just a simple rise and land made a great difference in the battle. But I had read a lot of books on it. I researched the uniforms and the weapons as best I could. Of course, photographs of officers, most Union and Confederate, are easy to find on the Internet, as we know. I imagine any Union officer of any rank, just about you can find his picture, which was a great advantage. And
Wayne, I'm sorry to interrupt, yes. But we're coming on our break right now.
Okay.
So let's just hang tight with that thought. I'm talking to what artist, writer Wayne Van Zandt about his graphic history of Gettysburg, and we're going to take a break right now. And stay with us.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
And we're back on Veterans Radio with this month's installment of At Ease with award-winning author Dwight Zimmerman. And Dwight and his guest are ready to resume their conversation. Dwight?
Thank you, Dale. I'm talking with writer-artist Wayne Van Zandt about his graphic history of Gettysburg. And, Wayne, before we continue on, I'd like you to tell our listeners where they can get this book.
Okay. In Gettysburg, The Graphic History, America's Most Famous Battle. It's published by Zenith Press. And you can get it at through zenithpress.com or amazon.com. or BarnesandNoble.com, and probably in the Barnes & Noble stores. I know some of my other books people have picked up there. So it's pretty well available.
That's good. And by the way, congratulations on getting nice quote from James McPherson.
That was a thrill.
I would say I felt the same myself when he said some good things about...
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay,
you know you're on the right track.
Yes, indeed. So tell us, as you were putting this story together, was there anything that you discovered new about the battle?
Additional detail, not in the general, battle itself, but little things about the individuals, some of the Union generals, some of their, physical attributes, and that sort of thing, but... the one thing I have to do in something like that is not just research the story, the narrative itself, but I have to research what things look like. Try to get pictures of all the buildings that's going to be shown. Of course, the uniforms and equipment is absolutely important, and the ground, the weather. What kind of day it was. All of that is important in this kind of thing because. You can maybe visualize that in your mind in just a written book, but I have to show the details all I can find anyway.
Yes, and now you only had 96 pages to work with here. Tell us about the challenge of condensing.
Well, that's true.
Major
but I tell
battle.
You, the people at Zenith Press have done such a great job of. I basically. I don't do the book like you would do like a comic book, like you used to do with Marvel, with full pages. I do individual panels, and then again, we'll throw maps in. And the people at Zenith have been so good at putting this together, when I finally get the finished product, I think, this is better than I thought it would look like. They really have done a wonderful job at that. My editor, Eric Gilge, has really been good at pulling things out and say, work on this point here, work on this. And as I say, you have to know when to stop. You have to know what to include and what not, because you are limited in space. I could go on and do a 200-page book, but, hey, that would be too much.
Yes, indeed. I remember when we were doing the our projects, and they were 146.
Oh, gosh. Well, you did a great job on the writing on the Hammer Enamel book, because that was a very difficult book to do, because there wasn't a whole lot of natural action as there would be in a battle. Sometimes people have an odd idea of what we do, particularly in something like this, because I've had people request some really odd subjects, like the Liberty Bell, which is just more of an idea as it is than anything else, or the Federalist Papers. How could you do a graphic album on that? I guess you probably could, but it's a lot easier to have action, to have movement that you can show.
A book of conversation wouldn't
work.
Yes. Well, let's talk about that, because it is a different approach to telling stories, especially since we're talking nonfiction here. Since it's a graphic medium, there's nothing more boring than to when the action is basically a bunch of people standing around giving speeches on a stage.
That's right. You have to make it interesting, and that's just, if you want people to read it, you're going to have to do that, and you're going to find some way to do it. And there are ways even to make things like that interesting, but it's always a lot better if you have, like, big armies charging each other and that sort of thing. It's a lot easier.
Yes, indeed. But that was the challenge there of me trying to figure out, in our Hammer and Anvil book.
Right.
Little scenes here and there, and you're just staging.
Oh, yes. That's true.
So at least here you had a lot of action, a lot of movement, and then you could break things up by your close-ups with the generals or these little vignettes to pause.
Even in those, because just the nature of what was going on, it could be very dramatic. I mean, just sometimes the words take over. I know particularly I remember thinking of the incident when James Longstreet tried to talk Robert E. Lee out of attacking Cemetery Ridge. And the stillness of that in the middle of all this action, to me, was very dramatic.
I was very impressed with the whole package that you produced here, because you also did the coloring too, correct?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I've pretty much do the research, the writing, and the illustration in color. And as I say, the Zenith has been a great publisher. We've already come out with a Normandy book that came out last summer.
We've got a lot of
things coming out. They've been very happy with this media, and we are and doing really good things. I'm working on a book about the Red Baron right now, and I'm going to be doing one on the Battle of the Bulge. But we have, coming out late summer, I believe it is, a book called Grant versus Lee about the last year of the war in Virginia, and also a book called Bombing Nazi Germany about the bomber campaign against Germany.
Okay.
And they're bringing in other artists and writers, I understand, to do some of these projects too.
Okay. Well, Wayne, we're coming up at the close here, and so I would like you to again tell our listeners where they can get your You'll find Graphic History of Gettysburg. This is writer-artist Wayne Van Zandt.
Yes, you can get it to Amazon.com or ZenithPress.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Well, I can't let him go away yet.
No,
we can't let him go away yet. We got a couple of minutes. This sounds to me like, Wayne, this is Dale. This sounds like those old classic illustrated comics that got me through English Lit. What is the audience for this? It seems very appropriate for high school and college kids, and of course for adults too, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, I don't try to write down to anybody at all. I just tell the story as best I can. But a lot of schools have been using them. I know there's been a college in Southern Florida that used our Vietnam book in a course, and there's a teacher in New Jersey that over the years has bought a lot of the books from me that I do. I have a Korean War book I did several years ago. He has bought a number of those for his classes, and he's getting Gettysburg, and he's got Normandy, and he's using these in his classes. And I think, history can be very dry to some people.
Oh, absolutely.
I've always loved it. I've always loved reading history. But you have to excite some people a little bit more about it, and this might be the way to do it, or at least make it a little bit more accessible to them.
I think so, and your guys' illustrations in all of your books that you've done have just been so fascinating that they draw you in so that you want to know more. And you know, if after reading one of your books, if you need more details, you can always go and get that. But at least you get some sort of idea of what was going on, because unfortunately today many of our kids are not getting these stories. And
there's so little time to teach. And from what Dwight was saying earlier, I heard that the time he spends in writing these, I spent a lot of hours on these things. But it's my passion. It's something I love to do. Mm-hmm. And I work hard at it every day. I try to get better. I try to get better at my writing. I try to get better at my drawing. So that's something to look forward to. Something to get up for.
Before you go, Wayne, you served in the Navy, correct?
Yes, I was in the Navy in the late 60s and the early 70s. And you kind of wonder, how does this affect what I do? Of course, I loved history before then, of course. But I think being in the military, even in the Navy at that time, gave you a little bit of idea of military life and the general idea of many times that people that are there don't want to be there. but I think it gave me a little bit more of an understanding of what military life was like.
Well, I think you've done a great job,
and thank you. I appreciate that.
As a veteran and a teacher, I just love your books and I like to use them myself, so it's a great thing. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
So we've been talking with Wayne Van Zandt about his wonderful book, The Graphic History of the Battle of Gettysburg. Wayne, good luck on it and your future projects, and I hope that you and I can work again sometime in the near future.
I have no doubt that we will.
Okay, Dwight, well, we do have a winner for your book, and that is our good friend Vance, who called in and said, false, it's the Navy that designed the Medal of Honor originally, and that is true. So we got to get a copy of your book out to Vance McCrum.
Great. Congratulations, Vance. Now, the fascinating thing, it was a member of the Army that actually came up with the idea. But the general who was the head of the Army, Winfield Scott, he didn't like the idea, so he shot it down. But the Secretary of the Navy loved the idea, so he said, well, the Army doesn't want it. We'll do it.
All right, Dwight, well, thank you again for another great installment of At Ease, and we're looking forward to another year of you bringing on these most amazing authors in the history of military writing. Thank you, Dwight, very much. And until next week, you are dismissed.
All views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily of Veterans Radio or this station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio.